First They Came by Pastor Martin Niemöller. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. I'm going to light my chalice this morning using some words from the Passover Haggadah. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. Let us join in the fellowship of prayer. Spirit of life and love, be with us as we gather for worship, each in their own place. Help us to feel a sense of community, even though we are physically apart. Help us to care for each other, as we come out of lockdown, keeping in touch however we can, and helping each other however we may. May we remember that caution is still needed, that close contact is still unwise. Help us to be grateful for the freedoms we have, and to respect the wishes of others. May we hold in our hearts all those who are grieving, lost, alone, suffering in any way. Amen. My first reading is from Wikipedia. Black Ribbon Day, officially known in the European Union as the European Day of Remembrance for Victims of Stalinism and Nazism, is an international day of remembrance for the victims of totalitarian regimes, specifically Stalinist, Communist, Nazi, and Fascist regimes. Formally recognised by the European Union and a number of other countries, it is observed on the 23rd of August and symbolises the rejection of extremism, intolerance, and oppression. The purpose of this day of remembrance is to preserve the memory of the victims of mass deportations and exterminations, while promoting democratic values with the aim to reinforce peace and stability in Europe. It is one of the two official remembrance days or observances of the European Union, alongside Europe Day. Under the name Black Ribbon Day, it is also an official remembrance day of Canada, the United States, and other countries. The Remembrance Day has its origins in Cold War era protests in Western countries against the Soviet Union that gained prominence in the years leading up to the revolutions of 1989 and that inspired the 1989 Baltic Way, a major demonstration where 2 million people joined their hands to call for an end to the Soviet occupation. The Remembrance Day is part of a common European response to Russian disinformation that seeks to deny Soviet war crimes and other atrocities and justify Soviet invasions and occupations, and has been attacked by Vladimir Putin's Russian government for its condemnation of Stalinism. In a 2019 resolution, the European Parliament highlighted the importance of the 23rd of August in pushing back against a Russian information war waged against democratic Europe. I invite you now to join with me in this alternative version of the Lord's Prayer. Spirit of life and love, here and everywhere, may we be aware of your presence in our lives. May our world be blessed. May our daily needs be met. And may our shortcomings be forgiven, as we forgive those of others. Give us the strength to resist wrongdoing, the inspiration and guidance to do right, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are your hands in the world. Help us to grow. May we have compassion for all living beings and receive whatever life brings with courage and trust. Amen. My second reading is from the afterword of If This Is a Man, by Primo Levi. If understanding is impossible, knowing is imperative, because what happened could happen again. Conscience can be seduced and obscured again. Even our consciences. For this reason, it is everyone's duty to reflect on what happened. Everyone must know or remember that when Hitler and Mussolini spoke in public, they were believed, applauded, admired, adored like gods. They were charismatic leaders. They possessed a secret power of seduction that did not proceed from the credibility or the soundness of the things they said, but from the suggestive way in which they said them, from their eloquence, from their histrionic art. They were acclaimed with hosannas and followed to the death by millions of the faithful. We must remember that these faithful followers were not born torturers, were not, with a few exceptions, monsters. They were ordinary men. Monsters exist, but they are too few in number to be truly dangerous. more dangerous are the common men, the functionaries ready to believe and to act without asking questions. Like Eichmann, like Hoss, the commandant of Auschwitz, like Stangl, commandant of Treblinka, like the French military of 20 years later, slaughterers in Algeria, like the Khmer Rouge of the late 70s, slaughterers in Cambodia. It is therefore necessary to be suspicious of those who seek to convince us with means other than reason, and of charismatic leaders. We must be cautious about delegating to others our judgment and our will. Let us join once more in the fellowship of prayer, using some words said on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the death of Anne Frank. God, you created us all in your own likeness. We thank you for the wonderful diversity of races and cultures in your world. Enrich our lives by ever-widening circles of fellow feeling and understanding. Show us your presence in those most different from us, so that in all our relationships, both by what we have in common and by things in which we differ, we may come to know you more fully in your creation. Amen. Judge eternal, bringer of justice, hear the cry of those who suffer under the lash of heartless political oppression, those who languish in prison and labour camps, untried or falsely condemned, those whose bodies are shattered or whose minds are unhinged by torture or deprivation. Meet them in their anguish and despair, and kindle in them the light of hope, that they may find rest in your love, healing in your compassion, and faith in your mercy. Amen. My final reading is by Reverend Steve Dick. Paul Robeson captures the essence of freedom, the defining bedrock of our liberal faith, by hearing it as a melody, a sequence of tones related to one another so as to make up a particular phrase or idea. Freedom is often perceived as a direction, escape, freedom from, or opportunity, freedom to or for, as if it is little more than offering a means to an end. This emphasis on liberation is a vital part of the human story, and loses no honour in the simple power of an aspiration. Yet its defining element, as part of the music of our faith communities, crossing language and cultural boundaries, is in the rhythm formed by the notes of freedom in, just as necessary to the sequence as escape and opportunity. We march proudly in service of liberation with those compelled by their own faiths to take up Robeson's peaceful weapons, lifting our voices in song and action, hoping to prevail against fear and despair. Where we sometimes find ourselves marching to Thoreau's Different Drummer is when we sing the tones that apply freedom not only to the boundaries, but also to the very stuff of our faith and religion. Freedom in faith is recognizing the continuing nature of revelation, living in the questions, open to new insights and discoveries. Freedom in religion is an appreciative challenge of our own experiences as stories to be rewritten as life is lived. This is not lukewarm toleration of that which wakes us in the night, but radical engagement in the connective tissues we know as our soul. We are frail, unequal to the tasks we face, but I believe our salvation is in our service to freedom from that which destroys life, in our commitment to freedom for radical opportunity and hospitality, and in our passion for freedom in the spiritual dialogue that unites us. I invite you now to join in a time of stillness and reflection, to sit with our back straight, our feet planted firmly on the floor, with our eyes closed and our hands resting in our laps. There will be some words, there will be a time of silence, then a few more words. We take a few precious moments to turn inwards. Tune out the sounds and bustle of the noise that surrounds us. Listen for the melody of freedom within the music of our heart. It can be heard when we can be quiet and peaceful enough to hear the song of our soul. The still small voice within that warbles our story as a ballad still being composed. knowing that sustaining faith and inspiring vision can only be in harmony when the inner voice is free. Hear the rhythm. Sing the rhythm. Be the rhythm. The rhythm that flows through the verses of our internal Bible. The beginning verse of liberation, freedom from that which wounds the spirit of life in us and in our companions in this world. The middle verse of continuing revelation, freedom to grow and develop as stories are told and shared, and change our worlds. And the third verse embodies the melody necessary to complete the rhythm. Freedom in faith to live in the questions. Freedom in religion to appreciatively challenge what we have inherited and to engage with that which wakes us in the night. Leave the lyrics. Surrender to the symphony within the silence. And when the heart song has been sung, and the percussion added by our soul has completed tapping out the rhythm of freedom, the refrain of our prayer is to take our voice wherever, to share the melody of freedom, to, from and in, to sing it, to hear it, and to live it for the good of all that we know and love. the song of freedom must prevail. Amen. Let's listen to some music. Many of us wear a red ribbon on the 1st of December, World AIDS Day, to help raise awareness and life-changing funds to fight HIV the world over. And many of us wear a pink ribbon as an international symbol of breast cancer awareness and to remember friends and family members who have been lost to this disease. There are many others. I came across a website offering 65, which lists hundreds of causes that such coloured ribbons raise awareness for. But I hadn't heard of Black Ribbon Day. As we heard in our first reading, it is tomorrow, 23rd of August, and is a European Day of Remembrance for the victims of totalitarian regimes, specifically Stalinist, Communist, Nazi and Fascist regimes. Until now, I had thought that Holocaust Memorial Day on 27th of January, the anniversary of the liberation of the concentration camps of Auschwitz and Birkenau, was the main one. But apparently, Black Ribbon Day was established in 1986 and was formally designated by the European Parliament in 2008-2009 as a Europe-wide day of remembrance for all the victims of all authoritarian and totalitarian regimes, to be commemorated with dignity and impartiality. World War II has been over for 76 years, and yet such reminders are still needed. Now, in 2021, there are still far too many victims of authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. Still far too many people who do not have the precious freedom to believe and say and act their deepest truths. An article on the World Population Review's website defines totalitarian countries as nations in which the government does not permit its people to participate in political decision-making. Totalitarian countries are also known as dictatorship countries. A totalitarian country is ruled by a single dictator or a group that has not been collectively elected. The ruling leaders of totalitarian countries do not merely enact laws. Instead, the people or person in charge controls all aspects of both public and private life. There is no limit to what a totalitarian government can control, because there are no checks or balances placed on the country's leaders. Essentially, totalitarians can do whatever suits their agenda and say anything that comes to mind. As a result, totalitarian countries are absolutely against the right of free speech, which includes a ban on any and all freedoms of the press. Some ideologies, beliefs and religions may even be forbidden in a totalitarian country. It says that there are only two totalitarian countries in the world at present, North Korea and Eritrea. But I would argue that there are many more in which at least some of the precious freedoms about which Steve Dick spoke in our third reading are not available, in which distinct sectors of the population live in fear and despair. One need only think about the current news about Afghanistan. And even when people live in so-called democratic countries, such as the United Kingdom, they may still not feel free to be themselves. This may be on account of cultural and societal pressures to conform, to stay quiet, to say nothing, rather than from fear of imminent death. But it is still not right. It is still not right that black, indigenous and other people of colour feel they need to wear a mask to be accepted in a white-centred community, that they are widely discriminated against. it is still not right that people of the LGBTQ plus community feel uneasy about holding hands or kissing each other in public. To give but two examples. In 2012, Maz and I spent our summer holiday in Poland. Nearly a decade later, I still have vivid memories of our visit to the Nazi concentration camps, Auschwitz and Birkenau. Being there reminded me forcibly of the power of evil. The sheer scale of the suffering undergone by the Jews, Poles, Gypsies, Communists, and other prisoners was horrendous. It was part of a deliberate and evil plan to free the German nation of Poles, Russians, Jews, and Gypsies, in the words of Otto Tierak, Hitler's so-called Minister of Justice. Jews in particular were to be totally exterminated, being seen as subhuman vermin. It was a task undertaken with meticulous and horrifying efficiency, carefully documented every step of the way. Apart, of course, from the 75% of the Jews arriving at Birkenau, who were simply marched down the platform from the transports straight to the gas chambers and murdered on the spot. The ruined gas chamber that we saw there, one of four, could take 1,500 people at a time, and their murders took about 20 minutes. The scale of this evil was almost too much to take in. Yet I don't believe in evil as an independent power in the world. No one is born evil. There is no such thing as original sin. I believe that every human being has the power to choose between good and evil. However, the choices that each person makes will set them on a path towards a life filled with good deeds or evil ones. And the farther one walks along the chosen path, the harder it is to turn aside. As the Native Americans believe, it depends which wolf you feed. I have to believe that there is a divine spark, that of God, in everyone. But perhaps those people we call evil choose to ignore its promptings. There are many degrees of evil. For example, I do not believe that the majority of German people during Hitler's Reich chose evil consciously, although the dyed-in-the-wool Nazis certainly seem to have done. But the Nazi propaganda machine awakened the latent anti-Semitism in many German hearts, giving them someone to blame for their hard lives, and enabling them to believe its lies and close their eyes to what was going on. Yet there were some who turned their backs on the temptation to evil and chose good. For example, Father Maximilian Kolbe, the Catholic priest who took someone else's place in a starvation cell in Auschwitz and died on the 14th of August, 80 years ago. Or the brave Poles who risked their lives to help the Auschwitz inmates by providing them with food and medicine and organized escapes. And of course, Oskar Schindler, who saved the lives of over 1,000 Jews, as famously portrayed in the Spielberg film Schindler's List. As we were holidaying in Poland, I thought it fitting that my holiday reading should be Nostromo by the brilliant Polish-born author Joseph Conrad. I studied it for A-level many years ago and hadn't read it for ages. I had forgotten how brilliant it is. It is a story on the grand scale, whose main theme concerns the generally tragic consequences of idealism, either in oneself or in others. Most of the main characters suffer on account of their own or somebody else's devotion to an ideal. What hadn't struck me until two-thirds of the way through the novel and the end of the holiday was how it fitted in with our visit to Auschwitz and Birkenau. The Nazis, too, were obsessed by an ideal. The supremacy of the Herrenvolk, the German race, and the elimination of all others. And this ideal, like many in Nostromo, led to death and destruction on a large scale. It seems that if we allow ourselves to become obsessed by an ideal, it skews our judgment and corrupts our reason. If we idealize something or somebody, we don't see it or them straight. Examples of this are littered throughout history, and sadly, very often have to do with one party's religious ideals conflicting with another's. And the dangerous idea of the good old days, which never truly existed, but which causes so many people to be resistant to change, resistant to accepting the new, resistant to accepting the other. Truly, the roots of evil are ignorance and propaganda. Think about the Crusades, the Inquisition, the great ejection over 350 years ago. And in more modern times, Hitler's final solution, the Balkan Wars of the 1990s, the Rwandan massacre, 9/11, and so on. If you strip every example back to basics, they all happened because one group of people stopped recognizing their essential commonality with another group of people, that of being fellow human beings, and got carried away by the idea that their point of view was the only correct one, and that therefore people with different points of view should be eliminated. It is only by the exercise of compassion, by being open to the hearts and minds of others, by recognizing that each of us is unique, precious, a child of God, that the closed mind and consequence intolerance can be avoided. Ignorance breeds intolerance, which in turn breeds fear and hatred, which can easily turn into all-out strife. Unfortunately, many unscrupulous politicians who sit at particular points on the religious or cultural divide see it as their job in life to foment intolerance and fear so that they can whip up their people to commit acts of aggression and violence in the name of religion or communism or the American way of life, whatever. The links between states and religions are very strong. The dividing line between tribalism and nationalism is a very thin one. So what can we, as Unitarians, do to fight against intolerance, against lack of freedom, even, and perhaps especially, if it does not affect us directly? Look at our three great tenets of freedom, reason, and tolerance. Individual freedom of belief according to individual reason and conscience, but also a tigerish determination to fight for the right of others to enjoy the same freedom of worship in whatever way they choose, so long as it doesn't harm anybody else. And not only to worship, but to live in the world free from discrimination because of their gender, race, or sexuality. Our fellowship in diversity, happy phrase, aims to be tolerant towards others. As Joyce Grenfell beautifully puts it, we believe in loving in spite of human imperfection. We believe in loving in spite of human imperfection. We all have the power to choose every day between acts that will make the world a better or a worse place for its inhabitants, not only our fellow human beings, but all living things. May we choose wisely, with compassion. Amen. Some closing words. Spirit of life and love, open our hearts and minds to the necessities of freedom and tolerance. May the love that overcomes all differences, that heals all wounds, that puts to flight all fears, that reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. May we return to our everyday world refreshed. May we share the love we feel. May we look out for each other, and may we keep up our hearts, now and in the days to come. Amen.